Hi, I'm Laura Kanoy, host of The Exchange. NHPR's Exchange is a lot more than what you hear on the radio. This podcast helps you listen to The Exchange whenever, wherever it's convenient for you. So these digital services are free for you, but they cost us money. Giving is easy to do, though. You can help out at nhpr.org or just follow the link right there in the show notes. And thanks.
Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
Edvest and You, a local New Hampshire nonprofit providing college student loans and student refinancing options. Information online at nhstudentloans.org or by calling 1-855-887-5430.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. A revolution in medicine called CRISPR is being studied in hundreds of biomedical labs around the world. Scientists say this gene editing technology has the potential to cure thousands of diseases and even prevent them. But CRISPR also ignites ethical debates given its ability to override genetic code. Today in The Exchange, what is CRISPR? Exploring the hope and the hype. Later in the hour, our Race for the First series continues with 1st District Democratic congressional candidate Chris Pappas. Let's hear from you, too. First, your questions about this medical breakthrough called CRISPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange or call in 1-800-892-6477. Our guest is Elizabeth Sergison. She's a PhD candidate at Dartmouth College. She uses CRISPR to research breast cancer. Elizabeth works with the Genomics and Molecular Biology Shared Resource at Dartmouth as their CRISPR specialist and helped found their CRISPR core. And wow, Elizabeth, it's really nice to meet you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So found their CRISPR core. So here you are at Thanksgiving, for example, and you say, hey, Aunt Susie, I founded the CRISPR core. That's what I'm up to. How do you explain that to Aunt Susie? It's very high-tech and complicated.
It's actually a lot simpler than it sounds. Basically, there are a lot of shared resources at Dartmouth, and they are groups of people that either have expertise or instruments that are too expensive or too confusing for most of the labs to have, and we're there just to help other researchers pursue whatever that they're interested in researching. And for the CRISPR core, that basically means I help people design CRISPR-related experiments, and I also make tools for them to use.
So again, with Aunt Susie, she says, okay, that's interesting, dear, but what is CRISPR?
Well, CRISPR is a genome editing technique. Basically, I like to think of it as molecular scissors. It's made up of two parts. There's a small guide RNA, which is kind of like a GPS. And then there is a small protein, and that is like the actual scissors. So you put these two parts into a cell, and the GPS will take the scissors to wherever it is that you want them to go, and then it will make a little cut in the DNA. And then that's really helpful for scientists because we can then get it to cut out bad parts of DNA. We can get it to cut out whole genes. We can even get it to cut and then insert another piece of DNA that we want to put into a cell.
Wow. So that sounds amazing, but it also sounds scary. Like, you're messing with my DNA. I mean, what if you get it wrong?
Well, that is a big concern. And scientists aren't doing this on people yet, and I don't think they should be for that reason. A lot of the CRISPR research is currently being done on cells in a dish. So it's basically they're human of origin, but they're in a dish. They're not actual people or anything like that. And that's a really good way to learn how CRISPR works, what we can do with it, and then without actually working on a person. People also are using CRISPR on other organisms like mice and plants, which is easier to work with than a person and a lot more ethical.
Well, and I saw an experiment in one of the documentaries I watched to prepare for today's conversation with you, Elizabeth. And it seemed like, anyway, by injecting CRISPR, and it just looks like a little, you know, a teaspoon of water or something,
yep,
from the videos anyway, it seemed like they cured a mouse of his blindness.
Yes. It's amazing.
Is that for real?
It is. It is. It's amazing what you can do with this technology, and it's come so far since it was first introduced in 2013.
Well, I want to get the backstory of this and then talk more about how it's being used now, also how it might be used in the future. And let me remind our listeners to join us, Elizabeth. Our phone number is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. You can respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. We're taking your questions on this revolution in medicine called CRISPR. Our guest is explaining how this gene editing technique works. So we'll take your questions and comments on that. Again, a little bit later, First District Democratic candidate Chris Pappas will be here, and we'll take your questions for him later in the hour. Right now, though, it's CRISPR. Join us, 1-800-892-6477. So, Elizabeth, you gave that great analogy about the scissors and the GPS, and the GPS tells the scissors where to go and snip out the bad DNA. I know you weren't involved in this mouse example, but just tell us how that might have worked. Kind of walk us through how that mouse could have been cured of its blindness, because it's pretty amazing.
Right. So if you are able to identify what gene within the mouse is causing the blindness, you can then design a CRISPR to target that piece of DNA. So you can take the little GPS part, the guide, and you can program it to be identical to that mouse part that is wrong in the cell. And then you can put in the guide and the scissors, which is known as Cas9, into the mouse itself and activate it, and it will directly go to that part of the DNA, and it will make a cut. And I don't know exactly how they did this experiment, but they probably introduced a second piece of DNA that had the correct version of the gene. And then after you cut the bad part, then you have this good part that's in there. And it can become incorporated into the DNA of the mouse. And then you have a permanently edited mouse.
And so it knows where to go.
It does.
It doesn't go to the wrong place and attach itself to some other strand of DNA.
Theoretically, yes. That is one of the big limitations of CRISPR, is stuff called off-target effects. And that is something that scientists worry about a lot. The CRISPR should go only to one place, but sometimes it will go to a place that is very similar to the place that you want it to go.
Oh, that's interesting. I can see the red flags are rising there.
Exactly.
You know, I watched a very informative 60 Minutes episode on CRISPR, and I want to play a little bit from it, Elizabeth, because it raises something that you just mentioned. One of the leading CRISPR researchers, Feng Zhuang, he's at the Broad Institute in Massachusetts, he said that gene editing, as you just alluded to, can create unintended consequences. And he gave this example of what could happen. Let's hear.
One way to prevent HIV infection is to remove a gene called CCR5 from people. So those people will not get infected by HIV virus, which you may think is a great thing. These people are immune from HIV. But the caveat is that if a person doesn't have CCR5, their risk for West Nile virus increases significantly. So if you prevent the disease by removing CCR5, you are also installing a new risk to those people. And that's where I think we need to be very thoughtful and careful.
And Elizabeth, I was so struck by that because he's right. You think, wow, you know, completely remove the risk of HIV, that's great. But because the human body is so complex and there's so much about our own biology that we still don't understand, you get rid of that, but then you have a greater risk for something else.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, scientists know a lot, but we don't know everything. And even if you think you know everything about something, there's always something new that comes up that nobody ever even thought of. And so that's why I think it's very hard to work with CRISPR in humans, because you don't know exactly what you're messing with. And if you edit one thing, you could be doing something great, but there could be many unintended consequences.
Because we really don't understand the full complexity of how we are put together, yes, strand by strand. When you were talking about snipping out the quote-unquote bad DNA, and I asked you how the good DNA knows where to go, I also wondered, Elizabeth, where does that snippet of bad DNA go? Does it just float around? I mean, how do we know it's not going to go somewhere else and cause trouble?
Oh, it'll eventually get degraded by the cell because it's not protected. Our chromosomes, which are made up of DNA in our cell, they have ends on them called telomeres, and they prevent them from getting degraded. So this bad DNA wouldn't have those, and it would just be cut up.
Well, and you've said a couple times already, you know, this is not ready for prime time with humans. How is CRISPR being used already, inside the lab or outside the lab?
There are tons of different applications of CRISPR. The majority of scientists right now are using it as a research tool. So they're trying to make model organisms or model cell lines that they can then use to do research on to study something else. So in science, oftentimes people study one gene or one protein, and the best way to kind of figure out what that gene or protein does is to get rid of it and see what gets screwed up. And CRISPR is a great way to do that because you can completely get rid of this protein in a cell and then see what happens.
In the lab?
Yes, in the lab, exactly. So this is all being done usually in cells in a dish or in a mouse or a rat or something like that. There are scientists that are working on editing in embryos, in human embryos, but there's a lot of different laws surrounding that. So most of that work is being done outside of the U.S. But inside the U.S., there are a few labs that do that, and they are not able to use federal government money to do that. So there are a lot fewer labs that are able to do that.
Because there are restrictions on working with human embryos.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I definitely want to talk to you about that in a minute, Elizabeth. But how do you use CRISPR in your own work?
So I've set up what is known as a CRISPR screen. So basically, we have 122,000 different CRISPRs that we've made, and we put them all into cells. And I'm working in breast cancer. So we're trying to identify a new tumor suppressor gene. So I like to think of that as like the brakes in a car. These are genes that are telling the cells to stop growing. And if you get rid of those brakes, these cells can grow uncontrollably, and that can lead to cancer. So what we did was we took these 122,000 different CRISPRs and we put them in cells, and then we looked for what cells started growing and forming tumors. And then we were able to look at those tumors and figure out what CRISPR got into each cell. And then that's how we've been able to identify new tumor suppressor genes in breast cancer.
Wow. So I'm already seeing the potential there, although it sounds really far down the road, Elizabeth.
It is and it isn't. Genetics is really complex, but there are some more simple genetic diseases that I think CRISPR is a really good candidate for. If you only have one thing that you're trying to fix, this is the perfect way to do it.
So in that work that you're doing in your lab, you're putting CRISPR into breast cancer cells?
Yes.
And then seeing if you can suppress the cancer from growing.
Exactly.
And have you had success?
I have, actually. We've identified what we think is a new gene in triple-negative breast cancer. And that is a subtype of breast cancer that's especially really hard to treat, and it tends to be very aggressive, and there aren't a lot of treatments for it. So we're really excited. We think this might be a really good potential for new drug therapy.
So when you achieve that success, does, if it were to be used, let's say, in an experimentation type of trial, would the woman get an injection or would she get a pill? Like, does this get created as a CRISPR injection, as I've seen in the videos, or is it something that you take as a tablet?
So what would probably end up happening with this is that we wouldn't actually give CRISPR to a patient. We have used CRISPR to identify this gene, and then a drug would be created for it, and then that would be taken. Because it's hard to get CRISPR into every cell of the body, And it would be hard to just inject it into a tumor. So what would probably happen would be some sort of pill or a chemotherapy type drug.
Wow. All right. Again, I want to remind our listeners that you can join us with your questions and comments about this gene editing technique called CRISPR. You might have seen a headline or two about it. Scientists are really excited about it. And today we're just finding out how it works, what some of the potential is. Join us with your comments, questions, concerns, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Elizabeth, so just listening to you talk, it occurs to me CRISPR is both a tool and an object, right? Because it's again, it's this little bit of liquid, but it's like smart liquid, if I could put it that way. I'm not putting it very well, but you know what I'm saying.
It is. It's actually kind of confusing because people use this term CRISPR when CRISPR itself actually refers to a bacterial defense system that we have kind of co-opted and turned into this tool for biology. So CRISPR itself is made up of that little small guide and the protein together. But people refer to CRISPR as a noun, as an adjective, as a verb, and everything.
Right. That's what I'm struck by, because it is kind of a noun and a verb and an adjective,
yes,
and so forth.
It is.
And by the way, it stands for clustered regularly interspersed palindromic repeats. I have no idea what that means, even though I'm starting to understand how it works just listening to you talk.
Right. So, yeah, that's exactly what it stands for. It doesn't make a lot of sense logically to most people. But basically what CRISPR is their bacteria have developed this way to kind of defend themselves from viruses. So bacteria often get invaded by viruses, and somehow they've come up with this method where they can save a small part of a virus, and then they have memory of it. So if they get infected again by the virus, then they say, oh, hey, I know you, I've seen you, let's cut you up and destroy you before you destroy me.
That's our immune system, then.
Exactly. And it's very similar to our immune system, but this is in a bacteria. So that is what CRISPR came from. And its acronym is basically just describing the way that the genes are made up in the bacteria. So it doesn't really, the acronym and what the acronym stands for doesn't really matter for how we're using CRISPR today. It's just describing how it originally works.
So it's basically enhancing the proclivities or habits or abilities of exist that we see in nature, in bacteria.
Exactly. Yeah. Scientists saw this. They said, oh, hey, that would be a really great tool to use. So they took it out of the bacteria, they changed it, and then they were able to put it into eukaryotic cells.
So is this related, Elizabeth, to what we often hear about now with cancer treatments, you know, using the body's own immune system to fight cancer?
It is. There actually are some people trying to use CRISPR to enhance the way our body can fight cancer by taking out people's blood cells and then using CRISPR to edit them to make them better fighters and then putting them back in.
Immunotherapy?
Immunotherapy.
Is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
I think we've talked about that on this program with some researchers mm-hmm. from Dartmouth, by the way. All right, Elizabeth, I have a lot more questions for you after a short break. And we're starting to get some emails from our listeners as well. exchange@nhpr.org. No question too large or too small, because again, this is new, it's complicated, but we're finding out about CRISPR. And we'd love your questions. exchange@nhpr.org or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We'll be right back. Thank you.
I've been an NHPR member for just about 20 years, and this year I decided to become a sustaining member.
Nancy DeBosque of Keene.
I think NHPR has tremendous value, and it's local, so I really do like to know what's going on in my state and use that information a lot in my work.
Thousands of listeners like Nancy support NHPR with ongoing monthly contributions, and you can too. Invest in independent local news and become a sustainer today at nhpr.org and click on donate.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, the revolution in medicine called CRISPR and why some scientists say this gene editing technique could change the world. Also, a little bit later in the hour, our race for the first series continues as we meet the candidates for New Hampshire's first congressional district. Now, this week, we're talking with Executive Counselor Chris Pappas. That's in about 20 minutes. Right now, though, send us your questions about CRISPR. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Helping us out is Elizabeth Sergesen. She's a PhD candidate at Dartmouth College. She uses CRISPR to research breast cancer. Elizabeth works with the Genomics and Molecular Biology Shared Resource at Dartmouth as their CRISPR specialist and helped found the CRISPR Core. And Elizabeth, lots of people emailing, and I'd love to share some of their questions with you. Kyle from Manchester says, can we use CRISPR to lengthen telomeres? I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Telomeres to fight aging. Kyle, I've read about telomeres and their role in the aging process, so I really appreciate the email. Do you know, Elizabeth?
I don't know of anyone who is currently studying this, but I think it's definitely a possibility. Telomeres have a very repetitive sequence of DNA, and so it would be pretty easy to create a CRISPR that would cut that sequence specifically, and then you could just add in extra DNA that contains that same repeat sequence.
Well, thank you for the question, Kyle. And here's another one from Diana. Have there been any experiments on cutting out duplicative genes, like Diana says, ATM? I'm not sure what that is, but you probably do. And why did you focus on breast cancer? And Diana, thank you for the email.
Well, there has been some research on ATM.
What is ATM?
So ATM is a gene that is basically like a repair system. So if your DNA gets damaged by something, whether it's like UV light or a chemical mutagen, it gets activated and it recruits repair enzymes that will kind of like fix it up.
Kind of like CRISPR.
Exactly. But kind of the human version.
Something that we already have inside of us.
Mm-hmm.
And some of us maybe more than others.
Right.
So go ahead. Yeah.
And ATM is a key cancer gene related gene, because you can imagine if you don't have a repair system active in your cells, then you're going to not fix all these mistakes. And then that could maybe you have a mistake that could lead to cancer later on. So there is a lot of work. Actually, there is work currently being done at Dartmouth on ATM, and it has been using CRISPR, and I have actually helped them knock out CRISPR in some cell lines in there. They're still at very early stages.
Wow, and that's really interesting to hear about that sort of natural version of CRISPR, because we all, you know, hear about people who, you know, live to 102 and, you know, never come down with anything. And you kind of think, okay, what do these people have? Maybe they had an amazing lifestyle, but still, what do they have that led them not to succumb to, you know, the diseases of old age that most people eventually succumb to?
Yeah, exactly. And that's something scientists are still working on, studying. There are lots of factors involved. And exactly how much of this and how much of that you need, nobody really knows.
Wow. And Diana also asks, why did you focus on breast cancer?
Well, personally, I focus on breast cancer because it runs in my family and I just have a personal connection to it. However, the lab that I work in studies just cancer in general, and we study all different types.
So here's a question from Alice, who was interested in the story that I mentioned where I saw a mouse supposedly cured of blindness. Alice, I want to let you know, Elizabeth did not work on that, but she explained how that might have happened. Alice says, cured a mouse's blindness, but does that mouse actually see? Doesn't the brain need to know or have learned what to do with the information from the eye? I'm wondering if that's outside your expertise, Elizabeth, because you work on breast cancer, not blindness. So
right.
I don't want to put you on the spot there.
It is outside my expertise, so I'm not really sure. But how I think it worked basically is that what had happened in this mouse was there was one interruption in this kind of communication channel that allowed the mouse's eyes to transport information to his brain, and then it's registering that it's seeing. And CRISPR was used to kind of fix that break and make that channel whole again that would allow that communication to happen.
Well, and Alice, clearly there's a lot more we could have talked about on the air with this today, so probably follow-ups on future shows. But for now, I'll just tell you, Alice, that we do have a link on our website to the 60 Minutes episode that features that. So if you want to go to our website, nhpr.org, and check out all the links that our producer Jessica Hunt put up. There's a lot more information there, and some of it's very good, by the way. Some science reporters have done a really good job trying to explain this to us. Here's an email from Tom, and this gets into the whole controversy, as you know, Elizabeth, about creating designer babies and so forth. Tom says, I don't know if this is appropriate for the show, but a little humor if you'd like. Could the good doctor edit one of those drops of water to help me jump higher on the basketball court? And Tom, I appreciate it. It comes up, you know, not just curing babies of potentially life-threatening diseases, but making them, you know, taller, faster, smarter, more good-looking.
Right. And it is a question I get a lot because
people I bet you do.
Yeah. People are very concerned about this, and for a good reason. That is not something that we are able to do right now. It is theoretically something that could be done, but it brings up a lot of ethical concerns. I think that's something everybody should decide for themselves with how they feel about that. But again, it's not being done now.
In the U.S.
In the U.S. It's not being done anywhere that I know of right now.
In this, in other words, when you say it, you mean basically taking embryos and...
Yeah, making designer babies, as you call them, taking an embryo and making sure they have blue eyes or can jump higher using CRISPR.
But from what I understand from this 60 Minutes episode, some doctors are taking embryos and trying to do the CRISPR thing. Go
right.
In, snip out the disease-causing stuff and put in the good stuff. Some are doing
yes.
that.
So people are doing it. But they're using embryos that are not viable. They don't actually, would never actually form a person if you allowed them to live. Oftentimes, these are like kind of mistakes that were made, or scientists are taking an egg and a sperm and fusing them and creating an embryo to work on, but it's never getting implanted into anything, so it could never grow into a person. So they're using these embryos to practice on because you don't know what's going to happen in a person unless you try it. And this is the safest way, I think, to be able to see what's going to happen, because we don't want to do this in people without knowing what the consequences are.
Well, as we heard earlier from that Feng Zhang in the 60 Minutes episode, he said, look, you know, we can take out this gene that causes HIV, but then that person is way, way more susceptible to West Nile. So what are we doing? In that episode, also, Dr. Paula Amato, a reproductive endocrinologist at Oregon Health and Science University, was asked about this idea of, you know, are you playing God? And she said, look, you know, this is really part of my mission as a doctor. We give people heart medicine. We give people, you know, high blood pressure medicine. So she sees this as part of just who she is as a physician. Let's hear a little bit from Dr. Paula Amato on that question.
As physicians, I think we're also trained to try and prevent disease. So if I know that you're at risk for a disease, doesn't have to be a genetic disease, and I know that there's a way that you can reduce your risk of that disease, potentially eliminate that, then I feel obligated as a physician to help you do that.
Again, that's Dr. Paula Amato talking about how she sees using CRISPR on embryos, again, known to carry a serious illness. And Elizabeth, I know you get a lot of the questions about this, you know, friends, family, colleagues. How do you answer those questions?
I always tell people that this is a decision that they should make for themselves. This is something that I think people should learn about and understand what's going on and then decide, you know, whether or not you agree with this. In general scientific community, CRISPR is probably 75% of CRISPR is being used just as a research tool and not actually looking into editing embryos themselves.
That's interesting. So as a research tool, to create medicines that will help. I see what you're saying.
Exactly.
Okay. I wonder, because we're talking about this, how well have you seen CRISPR explained, Elizabeth, in the mainstream media, in pop culture? I mean, never mind outside the confines of academia.
Right. Oh, it's pretty hysterical, actually.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, most of the time people get kind of the general idea, but they will give examples of things that could not be possible or maybe could be possible in 100 years, but there's no way we could do right now. It's I've never really seen it explained well in pop culture.
There was what was that movie that was released this spring?
Rampage.
Yes.
I have not seen it, but I have
Dwayne
heard.
Johnson, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
I have heard sorts of things. And it's funny because it starts out with some facts about CRISPR that are completely wrong.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay, if you saw the movie, listen up.
And then they accidentally create these like superhuman monkey type things. And the way that they're using CRISPR to do that wouldn't be possible because so CRISPR's used to target one thing. It couldn't be used to turn on all of the growth hormones right? Unless you had one CRISPR for every single growth hormone. And then you could like turn that on. And
I see. So just to give people background, I didn't see the movie, but I watched the trailers the stuff about CRISPR. So basically, Dwayne Johnson has this albino gorilla. It's his friend. He has a connection with it. And then somehow it's injected with, as they say in the movie, gene editing technology. And, you know, Dwayne Johnson says basically CRISPR. And the gorilla gets, you know, huge and scary and angry. And you're saying that's not going to happen. You could maybe cure the gorilla's eyesight, but all right. Well, I did want to ask you that. So let's go back to our listeners, Elizabeth. Lots more questions about how this works. And Mel is in White River Junction. Go ahead, Mel. Thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call. Great show this morning. So I just wanted to first say I'm really enjoying the conversation because my family is very much watching CRISPR. We have a daughter who has sickle cell anemia. I know there was a mention earlier about CRISPR being very useful for things that have one gene turn. And for a host of reasons, sickle cell doesn't get the level of funding that many other conditions do. But one article I read recently said that because of the ability of CRISPR to target that one gene, see what it does when affected, that it's also being used as a predicate for stepping into more cancer cell research. So I was wondering what you knew about that per se, and I really appreciate your mentioning that therapies aren't immediately available, but the question is, for something like sickle cell, do you see a time frame or horizon where meaningful therapies may actually come about?
And Mel, I'm really sorry to hear about your daughter. May I ask how old she is?
She's 12.
She's 12. Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much. And good luck with that. That's a hard road to travel. What do you think, Elizabeth?
Hi. So sickle cell anemia is a great target for CRISPR because, like I said, it's generally caused by one mutation. And it's even a better target because it's blood-related. And scientists can take blood cells out of people, use CRISPR, and then put them back in.
I see.
So I don't know about a timeline, but if I had to guess, I would say that sickle cell anemia and related diseases are going to be one of the first ones that are going to be cured using CRISPR.
Well, and it's so frustrating for families. And Mel, again, thank you so much for the call. To hear about these exciting things and then, you know, you ask the scientist, okay, when is this coming? Like, when can I do this to cure my loved one? And they say, well, maybe 2 decades, you know.
Right.
So how do people in Mel's situation sort of manage now? Like, does he go knocking on the door at labs around the country like yours? I mean, what does he do?
There are some clinical trials that are proposed to start in the U.S. that are going to be using CRISPR as a gene therapy. There is a list on some government NIH website that lists all the clinical trials, and I would follow that list and see if you see anything that your daughter may be eligible for.
Okay.
That's going to be the first way to attempt to test this therapy and see if it works. And if you're comfortable go for it. It's great help for science, and it would be great help possibly for your daughter.
Mel, good luck to you. Thank you for the call. Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. By the way, also Paula in Amherst, Mel, just to let you know, says she also wonders what the implications are for cystic fibrosis and CRISPR. Mm-hmm. So someone else out there with the same issue. Nancy in Durham asks, I would be interested in hearing Elizabeth's thoughts on the larger implications of humans bypassing natural selection and manipulating the human genome. This is sort of the meta question that you wrestle with, Elizabeth. Thank you, Nancy, right, for the email.
It's a difficult question, I think, and it's a question that I get frequently. In my opinion, the people will breed plants, for example, right? And you will eventually get a plant that has been bred against other plants to have a trait. CRISPR is an easier way to get there faster. So I think as long as all of the testing has been done to make sure that we're not getting any bad off-target effects, we're not hitting anything that we shouldn't be, that it could be a really good tool in the future. But we're not, scientists aren't even close to be able to do that. And I don't think they should even be trying right now.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the plants because as I was getting ready for the show, I thought about those charts that we looked at in biology a million years ago, and the memory is fuzzy, but basically you have two plants, and then over time, scientists and farmers would crossbreed them to make them more resistant to disease or last longer or just look better. Are we talking about the same fundamentals here?
Yeah, Elizabeth? Basically. Yeah, it's the same idea. We're just, like, you could take two plants and cross them together, and then you take the progeny and cross them together and do that, and eventually you'll get a plant with the trait you want. Using CRISPR, you can just take that trait and put it straight into the plant without having the time of crossing and crossing and crossing.
How much are American farmers using CRISPR?
So actually, there was a recent statement put up by the USDA saying that they are not going to be regulating CRISPR-mediated plants because it's, like I just said, these are all natural things that would happen over time. It's going to be different than like the GMO laws that may come into place. I don't think there are a lot of plants that have been developed by CRISPR that are currently being grown, but they are in production. And a lot of these plants are being given traits to help them be resistant to drought or maybe make a high fiber wheat plant or something of that nature.
That's another really interesting avenue that I won't ask you more about because I know your primary focus is on breast cancer. Elizabeth, hard to believe we run out of time.
Wow.
I really want to thank you so much for being here. It's real interesting, and we'll talk to you again. Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
That's Elizabeth Sergesen, PhD candidate at Dartmouth College, using CRISPR, as she told us, to research breast cancer. She's a CRISPR specialist. She helped found the CRISPR Core at Dartmouth. Now, coming up in just a minute or two, it's our Race for the First series. We'll be sitting down with Chris Pappas, Democratic candidate for the 1st Congressional District. Chris Pappas is currently executive counselor. He's a former state representative. And in the Manchester area, anyway, he's known best as co-owner of his family's business, the Puritan Backroom Restaurant. So that's coming up in a minute. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.